Pennsylvania to a fully competitive retail electricity market. As someone who participated many years ago with Chairman Quain and Commissioner Hanger and many other in helping craft the initial act, the Competition Act, I'm gratified to see the progress that's been made here in Pennsylvania. While there's been commendable progress, in my opinion, there is not a properly functioning and workably competitive retail electricity market in Pennsylvania today. From my standpoint, the single biggest factor that is holding Pennsylvania back, is it on? Got it. Okay. Is the way in which default service is structured and provided by the utilities. That structure, too low. There you go. Okay, we'll get it. That structure must change if consumers are going to realize the full benefits of competition. What is the vision that I recommend? And I think this really is about vision. It's about vision around a retail electricity market. And the key that I recommend is that you have to have a workably competitive retail market. Is there are many sellers and many buyers, inform consumers making active choices, and retailers innovating and improving their service and products every single day. This is what's happening in Texas right now. In fact, sometimes my wife tells me to stop thinking about electricity. Why does this happen in Texas? The key reason is that Texas got it right when it removed the utility from selling electricity to retail customers. It built a structure which was premised on 100% of consumers working through and with a competitive retailer. And that's today's reality. And consumers have benefited enormously. I think Chairman Smitherman showed you the numbers today. On top of just the price benefits, there's been other innovative products. Direct Energy itself has offered a number of innovative products. Prevention Plus, we've offered a product where we bundled heating, ventilation, air conditioning with electricity. We've offered a product called Home Connect, which was a very innovative solution working up the smart meter to show people how to budget their electricity. We've also offered Power to Go, which is our prepaid electricity product. In fact, I'd like to believe that Direct Energy is leading the way on prepaid electricity. These innovations have required huge amounts of capital, millions of dollars building these products. We also give over $500,000 each year to our neighbor-to-neighbor program to help customers pay their bills when times are tough. But I'm sorry to say that this type of innovation and investment will not happen in Pennsylvania without a full embrace of the vision Pennsylvania put in place with the Competition Act many, many years ago, a vision built around vibrant retail competition. It's my understanding that some parties don't share this vision. For instance, as I read the Office of Consumer Advocate's comments, they believe it's more acceptable for the default supplier to serve the vast majority of consumers. They believe that it's more acceptable for every consumer to get plain vanilla products. That's more acceptable for customers to not partake in saving hundreds of dollars per year by switching. And that it's more acceptable for the monopoly utilities to continue to be the exclusive provider of default supply. The Commission has the opportunity to move beyond this view and fully deliver the vision and benefits which are central to the Competition Act. What needs to happen? The chief culprit is that default service is the provider of first resort here in Pennsylvania in many markets rather than the provider of last resort. That's not the way to move Pennsylvania forward. What Pennsylvania needs to do is work in the coming months to establish a new default structure which brings competition into this role and which creates a truly level playing field. The Commission should announce that it's going to transition the market to one in which all customers are taking service from competitive suppliers in a default service that is truly a backup and is provided by a competitive supplier. The goal must be that by June of 2013, this is in place. In the interim, the Commission should take other actions, competition-enhancing actions, such as a new mover switching, a switching bonus program, utility shopping incentives, and better marketing around what's going on. I think the OCA commented that consumers have spent, I think the number, we can check, $100 million over the last 10 years about competition, and many still don't get it. These are some of the steps the Commission should consider. The big change, though, has to be properly structuring default supply. In conclusion, Pennsylvania's retail electricity markets have progressed, but can't go any further with today's default structure. When I first came to Pennsylvania in 96, the goal, as somebody, Representative Tooley, told me, was to be the leader in electricity competition. With the right changes due to this investigation, that vision can finally come to fruition. Thank you for the opportunity to appear today. I would be delighted to answer any questions.
Thank you, Jim. It's now my pleasure to introduce Jim Burke, Chairman and CEO of TXU Energy. Also, an investor here in Pennsylvania through Brighton Energy Services as an electric generation supplier. Jim?
Thank you, Chairman Paulson, Vice Chairman Coleman, members of the Commission, Judge Buckley. It's my pleasure to be here today. I am CEO of TXU Energy and CEO of Brighton, and I'll explain those two entities in just a moment. TXU Energy is the largest retail electric provider in the state of Texas. We actually compete very actively with Jim Steffes and his business there. We look forward to competing with him here in Pennsylvania. We've chosen to use the name Brighton, and we have a license to operate in Pennsylvania. We are currently not operating in Pennsylvania. Therefore, my comments today, I hope to serve as a resource, building on Chairman Smitherman's comments and other members of the various panels on how Texas made some of its decisions and how it may be applicable for the Pennsylvania policymakers moving forward. I will say that I did have some prepared remarks, and I'm going to adjust them a little bit based on some of the comments offered so far today and maybe address some of the questions that that you may ask. I think one of the keys in the Texas market, as Chairman Smitherman noted earlier, was separating the former investor-owned utilities into three distinct parts. A retail electric provider, even though it's similar to an EGS here, the relationship is much deeper. In Texas, the retail electric provider is the main entity that a customer deals with, not only for choosing them as a generation supplier, but also other products and services, and they receive the bill from the retail electric provider. The TDSP, or the EDC in this equation, is mainly there for meter reading, outage response, and all T&D activities. Over time, even though it wasn't required by statute, the names of the EDCs there in Texas have taken on different names from the affiliate retail electric provider. They are completely different names, not just a name where the fourth word might be different and the first three are the same. It's actually very different, to be very clear in the market, in all areas of Texas, that the reliability is guaranteed by the equivalent of the EDC. But they are not who you call if you have a billing question. They are not who you call if you have a complaint about your rate. And they certainly are not who you're calling for other value-added products and services. And generation being completely competitive in Texas, there's not only the incumbent generators, but lots of new capital attracted so that retail electric providers can procure power from any number of generators, not just the affiliate that they had when the market opened to competition. Fundamentally, I would say the Texas market, and it was a bold move by policymakers, was a bet on customers. It was a belief in the customer's ability to be educated and discern through time the key attributes that they would choose an electric supplier based upon. What's interesting is when you look 9 years after the full development of the market, even though terms default supply, provider of last resort have been used multiple times, they are actually irrelevant concepts in the minds of a Texas customer. They couldn't tell you who a polar is. They could not tell you who a default supplier is. At the beginning of 2007, the price to beat mechanism, which was a transition mechanism, fully expired, which meant that the price the market could bear, frankly, was a decision that any retail electric provider as an affiliate could charge any price. Knowing, however, that Chairman Smitherman is sitting behind me, we would be reluctant to charge a price at any time that we would lose too much share, be noted in the media, come up before legislative sessions, which are always part of the activity that we have with multiple stakeholders in the market. Thus, retail electric providers today, over 40 are on the Power to Choose website, over 250 offers in every zip code. There is not a single customer on the provider of last resort that I'm aware of in the state of Texas. Because retailers, dozens of retailers with millions of consumers have found a one-to-one relationship where they mutually agreed to terms, which include pricing, billing parameters, other value-added services. So the goal, as I see some of the dialogue today, is how do you get to the end state if we even agree that that's the end state that you're seeking to achieve? And I think the Texas market has had its challenges during the course when the natural gas prices ran up. But because retailers had a chance to compete along the way, the default price that the affiliate rep was charging was moving in tandem, vibrant competition consistently came into the market. Low-income support. I'm proud to say TXU Energy won the National Fuel Funds Award, and we're the only unregulated competitor for that award. We have $5 million of annual support for bill payment assistance. Some of our strongest advocates in Texas are social service agencies. They will actually encourage their customers to stay with TXU Energy because we provide bill payment assistance, purely voluntary. There is no rate base for reimbursement. And we believe that that creates a stickier customer relationship, and we'll work with these customers. And frankly, low-income customers pay on average as well or better than the average customer. They just may need some flexibility along certain times of the billing cycle. And that's a point of differentiation that I would also highlight. So I'm going to conclude my remarks here. I'm very appreciative to be part of this panel, and I look forward to any further questions you may have.
Thank you, Jim. It's my pleasure to introduce Gene Allison, Senior Vice President for Marketing of PPL Energy Plus. Gene.
Good afternoon, Chairman Paulson and members of the Commission. My name is Gene Allison Drini. I'm Senior Vice President at PPL Energy Plus, an electric generation supplier since 1998 and an active participant in the competitive retail electricity market in Pennsylvania. PPL Energy Plus is a strong proponent of retail electric competition. We have a great interest in its continued growth. According to the Commission's PA Power Switch website, 1.1 million Pennsylvania residents and businesses have chosen competitive electricity suppliers. This is a positive for Pennsylvania, but it is just a start. We must not use the number of shopping customers as the sole measure of the market's success. More needs to be done to advance the competitive market, and we appreciate the Commission's interest in taking the next steps. A truly successful competitive retail market has few barriers to entry, uniform standards that all EDCs and market participants understand and follow, a wide range of products and services, and innovative uses of technology. This infrastructure may be developed through investments by EDCs, but its power will be enabled by the creativity and innovation of the competitive market. We must be willing to look into the future, freely grasp the innovations that have occurred in other industries, and allow them to grow and prosper in retail electricity markets. What factors have contributed to the promising start for electric choice? First is price. EDC default rates since 2010 have been higher than market prices, allowing suppliers to make attractive offers at prices lower than the default rate. Second is the Commission's Retail Market Order of August 11, 2009, which directed PPL Electric to take wide-ranging actions to remove potential barriers to market entry for suppliers. The actions included, but were not limited to, consumer education, access to customer information, electronic data interchange, billing issues, and purchase of receivables. All of these factors are essential for creating the conditions in which retail competition can gain a foothold and grow. PPL Energy Plus believes the retail market order was an important as price in creating a vibrant market in the service territory of PPL Electric Utilities. PPL Energy Plus believes such orders should be implemented and approved upon for all EDCs statewide. The Commission's goal should be to create a competitive retail electricity market that has consistent rules applied to all EDCs and EGSs, and educated customers who have the knowledge and incentives to select the products and services they desire from the market. A subject of this investigation is default service. The Commission has asked whether EDCs should continue to be default service providers. Before I discuss this, I would like to make this statement. We may be approaching a crossroad where our retail market will really just ebb and flow based on wholesale market prices, or a retail market that thrives by unleashing competition and innovation. Default service should not have been intended as a competitive option. It is rather a last resort for customers who cannot or do not choose competitive supply in the market. A few changes to default service requirements would immediately improve retail market competition in Pennsylvania. First, modify the procurement process so that default service rates more closely track market prices. Default supply should be obtained through a shorter-term purchases so the default service rate better reflects current market prices and to give customers an economic incentive to purchase products and services from EGSs who will develop products and services in response to the demands of their customers. Second, ensure the cost of default service is more closely aligned with the cost of competitive supply. Because competitive suppliers incur costs that default service providers do not face, there is a mismatch between EGS offers and default rates. Finally, require the default service plan be plain vanilla. Options are more appropriately offered by competitive suppliers. A default rate more aligned with market prices and market costs provides greater price incentive for customers to choose alternative suppliers who design innovative products and services that meet their needs. These measures would remove barriers to competition, give customers greater incentives to shop, allow markets to grow, open opportunities for customer-driven solutions, and focus on a future vision of a competitive retail markets, which is an important next step for market development. PPL Energy Plus applauds the Commission for its interest in improving the competitive retail market. We welcome the opportunity to work with the Commission, EDCs, and retail market participants to develop a retail market with clear, consistent, and uniform rules, with few barriers for customers to understand and choose, and with a large selection of competitive options, product offerings, and innovative services. Thank you, and I look forward to answering your questions.
Thank you, Gene. Our next presenter is Mr. Tony Banks, Vice President of Competitive Market Policies for FirstEnergy Solutions. And I want to thank him for putting up the slide here. I see the new platinum LEED certified building you're going to be putting up in Greensburg for us there. No one's laughing when I said that. It'll look like
the one in Akron, right?
Akron, okay. We'll try to get you into Pittsburgh here soon as you grow your business here. It's a pleasure to introduce Tony Banks for his presentation. Tony?
Thank you, Chairman Powelson, and thank you, Commission, for this opportunity for FirstEnergy Solutions to talk about some of the ideas it has around how current competitive markets work in Pennsylvania and some of the improvements we think can be made in the competitive markets in Pennsylvania. And basically, there have been a lot of discussion around a lot of things around default service and all those kind of things. So what I'm going to do is focus basically on two aspects of this whole proceeding. And one is to talk a little bit about the current structure and things that we think can be improved in the current structure to make that more workable. And then secondly, to kind of go right to the heart of the matter, which is try to address the role of the EDC as a default service provider and offer an alternative structure that we think can work quite well. If you look at page 2, when we think about the current structure, first of all, if you look at it purely from the perspective that we want to have customer price stability, we think that you can make an argument that the current structure works. When you take into consideration both the wholesale and the retail procurement process, which are both competitive, there is an argument that can be made that all customers are getting a competitive price. But we would argue that that competitive price is not necessarily the best price, because it depends a lot on when the procurements were made and other factors that don't speak to the lowest cost over time, which is one of the objectives that have been defined in the current structure. We do think, however, that in any structure, whether it be a wholesale procurement or a retail procurement, all qualified suppliers should be able to participate. We think that by eliminating any supplier from the procurement process, you end up with a result that is not to the best interest of the customer, which would be the lowest price possible. So many suppliers participating produces the best result. We do think that because of the uneven nature of the shopping statistics across the state, it is very important that we get more consistent operational practices across the EDCs. I understand that's a difficult task, but at the end of the day, the more consistency you have across the EDCs, the more opportunities there will be for suppliers to enter into the market, because now they're looking at the market as a whole as opposed to an opportunity in one particular EDC or another. And you can see some of the items that we think would need to be looked at around billing options, website information, and we've had other folks talk about that earlier. The next bullet I won't talk about.
Good answer. You're paying attention.
But I will whisper that we think that's something that should be considered. And lastly, we think that there needs to be a careful assessment of striking the proper balance between consumer protections and customer choice. And we don't suggest that you reduce consumer protections, but we do think that in some of the consumer protections, you have unintended consequences around whether or not some of the protections are encouraging customers to stay where they are and or keeping suppliers out of the market. So we just think that there needs to be an assessment of all the protections to make sure they aren't acting counter to achieving the goal of customer shopping. Now, this next framework is one that we also think will work. And if you're thinking more about competition, promoting competitive markets, and innovation in products and service, we think that a model something like this, which will be familiar to Chairman Smitherman, it has some elements of a Texas model. But the first thing that we thought was important is that you need to align the effective date of whatever you decide to do with customers with the current default service procurement process. And since most of the utilities in the state have procurements that end on June 1st, we thought that that could be an objective for a transition to a different model. We also think that it's critically important that the EDC retain some of its responsibility, because there is an infrastructure that the EDCs have built, and for an ease of transition and to reduce the amount of confusion, we think the EDC should continue to provide data management services, supplier billing services, and other administrative services. And again, we think the infrastructure is there, and we think it would make for an easier transition to a new model. The next bullet talks about the alternative default service provider. And without getting into statute and all those other kind of things that might need to be addressed in this model, we do agree that the ADSP should be a backstop only. I mean, there shouldn't be a default service that encourages customers to select that as their option. And we think that you accomplish that by, again, having the default service price be short-term, and we propose an hourly market, maybe adjusted to a monthly price. We think that companies interested in being the default service provider would petition the commission that they would be willing to provide that service at some administrative fee, and that would be a competitive, discussion that the commission would want to have and compare suppliers. And again, they would have to be qualified. Now, whether they need to be the affiliate or not, again, I think that all competitive procurement should allow as many participants as possible in the process. But I think it would be an hourly price with an administrative fee. We think then that for the smaller customers, and we define that as under 200 kilowatts only because in our experience, and ours isn't the only one that counts, I understand that, smaller customers our customers above 200 kilowatts seem to have more options to shop than customers under, so that's kind of an arbitrary level that we've set based on that condition. And then we think that when you move over then how you get customers over to competitive suppliers, we think that an auction may be appropriate, and it would be an opt-out auction. So to the extent that a customer did not select an EGS already, so if they're already shopping, they would not be in the auction, or if they opted out of the auction, they would go then to the default service provider. And we propose, though, a descending clock auction. And part of the reason there is that it's been our experience that descending clock auctions typically produce the lowest price. And that helps to retain the idea of giving the customer something in the process, because in a descending clock auction, you have an independent auctioner establish a price and solicit bids from multiple suppliers. Those suppliers will bid on the load that's available. And to the extent there's more supply than demand, the auctioner ticks that price down. And he continues to tick that price down until supply equals demand, which means that now he has a price at which suppliers are willing to supply all of the load that might be available. We also think it's important to perhaps have a statewide auction as opposed to having individual EDCs go at one time, because when you think about the demands of trying to make this change, we think that one process consistent across all EDCs in the state will provide for the least confusion to the consumer. So again, that's a summary of how we think that an alternate framework might work as you think about moving customers to an alternative default supplier as well as to competitive EGCs. So the next slide is number 4, and again, it's a reiteration of what I just said. It just kind of identifies the roles and responsibilities of the individual players in the process. And then I'll move on to slide 5, which talks about a timeline, and again, the important element of the timeline is that we think it needs to coincide with the end of the default procurement processes at the individual EDCs, and most of them, or at least all the major ones, end on June or May 31st, 2013. And we think it needs to start soon enough so that you allow for the proper customer education, because, again, we think that's going to be a critical element in any transition to a new structure, and the timeline needs to be able to reflect that. And we have other dates and times on here, but again, the dates and times aren't as important as covering the key elements and allowing for significant consumer education to get to the new model. So that concludes my comments, and again, I thank the Commission for allowing me the opportunity to express First Energy Solutions views. We look forward to being able to continue to participate in the process for getting to competitive markets in Pennsylvania, and I welcome any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony. Our last presenter will be Mr. Richie Hudson. He is the state chairman of the Retail Energy Supply Association, and I want to thank him for his leadership with RESA and the RESA members that are with us here today for your participation both through the OCMA process and going back to 2008 with our en banc hearing on wholesale power markets. So, Richie, welcome, and I look forward to hearing your comments.
Thank you, and thanks again for the opportunity to be here this afternoon. One of the benefits of going last is you get to sort of respond to some of the issues that came up earlier in the day, and that's what I will focus my remarks on rather than going through prepared testimony. I'd like to try to address three issues that were brought up in some of the other panels this afternoon. But before I do that, I wanted to try to answer the fundamental question of why is it that after this initial transition period with expiration of rate caps, you have the vast majority of customers, particularly smaller residential and small business customers, remaining on EDC-provided default service. And I think we could speculate and offer a variety of different reasons, but in my opinion, the fundamental biggest reason is the notion of status quo bias. And this has actually been studied academically by folks that are a lot smarter than I ever will be. And there's a tremendous amount of human behavioral research around this notion of status quo bias. In human decision making, anytime you create an option that is a status quo option, individuals overwhelmingly choose that option despite a variety of reasons and economic rationales to choose another option. And I think that's at the heart of why we have the stagnant level of customer switching in some parts of Pennsylvania. And I think addressing that status quo bias should be the focus of any policy reform that we look at. The fundamental question to ask ourselves today is whether the status quo is okay or whether we want to embark on some progressive change. And RESA would unequivocally say that we need to embark on some substantive change, and we support wholeheartedly the efforts of this en banc hearing and this retail markets investigation to explore a wide variety of mechanisms to get to a more successful end state for competitive retail market development here in Pennsylvania. The three issues that I wanted to discuss that have come up earlier today are, one, the notion that restructuring default service would somehow jeopardize or the current default service model provided by the EDCs is providing least cost service to customers. And changing that model would jeopardize that provision of least cost service. I fundamentally disagree with that notion. And as an anecdotal example to prove this point, as has been discussed earlier, the PPL rate for small commercial customers just increased dramatically from 9 cents to 13 cents overnight. And I would submit to you that 13 cents is not the least cost option in the market today, nor is it providing customers the benefit of current wholesale prices. Second, I'd like to address this notion that any change to the default service model will result in forcing customers onto something that they didn't choose. I think the fundamental flaw in that argument is that the current model is forcing customers onto something that they did not choose. As has been mentioned earlier, a customer that moves into a utility service territory is not affirmatively choosing default service. They're put on default service without anyone asking them who they would actually like as their competitive electricity supplier. And then finally, I'd like to address the argument that has been raised that any restructuring of default service would somehow result in eliminating essential backstop electricity service for vulnerable populations, in particular low-income customer groups. I fundamentally disagree with that argument as well. As has been outlined in a variety of the recommendations that are before the Commission in this proceeding, there are a number of options that can be taken to restructure default service in a manner that is more supportive of robust competitive markets while retaining an essential provider of last resort service. And the recommendations that RESA has put forth in our comments spell out a detailed process to transition away from the current utility-provided default service for the smaller customer market to a new model in which you would have a transitional default service that would be provided by competitive retailers while retaining a provider of last resort service that would be set at prevailing market prices similar to the current hourly price structure for the large commercial and industrial market. So restructuring default service would in no way require the elimination of a form of backstop service for customers. And that would conclude my remarks. Thank you.
Thank you, Richie. Vice Chairman Coleman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question, and that is, I guess, looking at the reality of change to this process and realizing that that change may take some period of time, a question I would have for each of you is interim measures that you would suggest that the commission consider as we're waiting for that longer-term process to maybe run its course. Are there things that that you would like to see the commission entertain in terms of impediments in the retail marketplace?
I'm happy to start. I think fundamentally the policy that we should examine is trying to get a way to overcome that status quo bias. And I think that can be accomplished by fundamentally restructuring the default service as it exists today. But with that, I think that policy change comes some interim measures that should be addressed, and we outline those in our comments. Any process to transition from the current utility-provided default service to a retail supplier-provided default service, in our opinion, should have three basic tenets. And one of those is ensuring that during a transition period leading up to that date in which default service is reformed, that you embark upon measures to encourage customers to affirmatively select a competitive electricity supplier. And those measures would correlate with some of the recommendations that Secretary Hanger mentioned earlier. When customers move into a new utility service territory, they should be given the option of selecting from a list of competitive electricity suppliers. Frequently throughout the year, whether it's semi-annually or quarterly, the EDC should educate customers about their competitive options through bill inserts or other mechanisms that allow customers to easily and conveniently select alternative competitive electricity supplier. So those are some interim measures that could be adopted.
I think there are measures that need to be changed regardless of what model you go to, and a lot of those are around trying to achieve consistency across the state as to how the EDC relates to suppliers, how it processes EDI transactions, a lot of things that, again, if you make those things consistent, suppliers will have the ability to enter into many markets as opposed to only having to focus on the ones where they think they have an easier way of going about those things. So I would say that education and then consistency across the EDCs as it relates to supplier and administrative support services, that can be worked on now. But I think that somewhere in the near future, and I don't know how near that is, the commission's going to have to try to make a high-level statement as to, okay, here's the end state. And you start to talk about the end state and then the steps to get there, and then you rely on the folks who support the effort to work on the details, because there are too many details to figure it out up front. But I think that when you think about whether innovation, competition, those are your primary objectives, and I think you start to move more than to this alternate model. If just having a stable price for customers is your objective, you may want to stick with the current model and start to consider tweaks. But I think that has to be established up front, and then you have groups working to make that happen. Otherwise, you end up with folks working on their own agendas within the effort they're trying to achieve.
Just to reinforce the comments about the move activity versus switch activity, if you look at state of Texas, there's roughly 6.6 million customer locations, and there's been over 26 million transactions where an electric provider has been selected. So almost four per locations in the 9 years. That doesn't include all the choices that they might be making to choose a different product or plan with a given provider. That's how many times they've actually had to select a provider. Three quarters of those are moves. So a move event is when the customer, in territory or out of a territory, has to be making a choice because they've got a provisioned service. So anything that could facilitate the ease of choice during the move process or even remain with the existing alternative supplier moving from one location to another and not having to go back to default service in the interim would certainly help the statistics.
I think I agree completely with the mover model. I think the education piece is key too. Again, you know, surveys we've done, half of customers aren't shopping because they're confused or they misunderstand what's going on. You know, those are recent surveys we've seen in different markets here in Pennsylvania. So there is something about how we've been doing education that's just not getting through. And I don't know what we need to do, but we need to do a better job of that. I think the other point I would make, while they're interim steps, the key step, I think, is to sort of state that this is where Pennsylvania wants to go. If you make that step or make that announcement sooner rather than later,
could
I think there will be
investment.
Could you
hold on for a moment, Mr. Steffes?
What?
One moment.
Oh, sure. Right. I do think, though, the sooner this commission can clarify that, you know, it wants to drive down a road of a clear retail market, competitive retail markets, and that's the vision, I think that a lot of other things will begin to fall into place, and all the stakeholders then will know where they need to go and what resources they want to put behind getting to that point.
And I would agree with my colleagues. I think we could probably do two things in parallel. One, I believe the education issue is extremely important, and we could do that in parallel while we try to, you know, provide the vision of where we think retail choice is going, so we can work on that together.
Thank you, and again, thank you to all of you for joining us today. Commissioner Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before I get started, I'd just like to say to Richie, turn around and take a look behind you. You went last, but all those folks behind you stayed around to hear what you had to say. Mr. Burks, I was instructed by Chairman Smitterman to ask you a question. just so you know where it came from.
Sure.
But again, to get a sense of a healthy retail market, entry of buyers and sellers, suppliers and buyers, is an important statistic. And the question is what is the turnover of customers for you on an annual basis in general?
Jim has to cover his ears when I answer that question. You know, it's so two things to answer. One, I'm going to give you some market statistics. Because we are competitive, I'm pretty sure most of the competitive suppliers do not actually discuss any underlying churn data. You can see some of the aggregate customer statistics in terms of where they began a particular year and where they ended a year. But underneath that, we have customers that choose other suppliers, and we are actively marketing all of the time. I've worked for three retailers, all in the Texas marketplace, so I've had some experience not just at TXU Energy. And switching has become easier. As Chairman Smitherman pointed out, the switching time frame is now no longer than 7 days, which means that customers are getting more of an instant gratification when they want to make a move. So I would tell you that ballpark, and Jim may have a different range, but I would say the average retailer could expect to lose anywhere from 20 to 40% of their starting base of customers each year and have to go out and reacquire at least that range to stay flat. And if you look at the aggregate statistics, you disagree with
that? I think that's we like to believe we're on the low end, but yeah.
I try to make sure he's on the high end of that stat, but I would say if you look at the statistics that I was just showing you, if you took the 26 million and you broke that down on a per year basis, you're getting to an average of 40% of the number of locations in a given year has a switch or a move transaction on average. That might be one of them has six moves in 1 year or six switches in 1 year, and one may only have one every 3 years. But it is a very vibrant market, and I will tell you that the price that the market will bear is lower and lower every day, as Chairman Smitherman showed you on his last slide, because anytime you're trying to send a price signal to the customer and they see they have several hundred alternatives and it's easy to switch in 7 days and potentially same day as we continue to speed up the transaction processing, there's a lot of transparency in the market, and that's only accelerated over the last several years.
Thank you very much. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
The other point I would just make out, and I don't know if Jim sees this too. Well, there are many consumers that I serve today, customers I serve today, that don't ultimately make a switch decision because they've called me and they said, if you don't lower my price right now, Mr. Burke has made a great offer. And so those won't show up in that 24% of switching, but right. There's an awful lot of our customers that if we don't show them a better price when they call, they will make that decision. So that also goes on, that you won't see that in the data.
Correct.
But it's a big number as well.
Thank you. I would like to commend you all and the RESA for your, as the Chairman Powerson has said, for your investment in Pennsylvania and your belief that Pennsylvania consumers are capable of making informed choices.
Commissioner Cawley.
The nub of this, if we would make the change you're suggesting, is whether the new model would be or would provide a price that the current model does, or better. In other words, the law currently provides that the default provider must acquire the default supply and the competitive wholesale market must develop a portfolio of long-term, short-term spot market prices, which we all know therefore includes a risk premium, and default suppliers really are paying more than they would really have to, and that's why you're able to compete and beat them. So let's say we adopt this new model. We would need a legislative change, because I don't think you're suggesting that we would continue with a requirement to acquire power ahead of time in a portfolio in a competitive basis. I think what you're suggesting instead is that the alternative default supplier, whether you achieve that by auction or wherever, would acquire the power. How would you do that so that we could convince the legislature they should remove this requirement that's in there now for advance portfolio-based supply? How can you assure the legislature that we're not creating a whole new monopoly here where just you fellas are going to determine the price? Because if we can't get over this question, this is a non-starter.
Well, I think those are great questions. And while we understand the sensitivities about not biting off more than you can chew, so to speak, with the legislature, we believe that there is incredible flexibility within Act 129 to allow for the provision of default service by an alternative supplier. And Pennsylvania has had some experience with this in the Pike County service territory through the aggregation that that Direct participated in there. One could argue that in that process, Direct essentially fulfilled the role as an alternative DSP, although it wasn't called that. As I understand the Act 129 requirements, and I'm not a lawyer, that's why I pay Dan Clearfield to make these arguments for me, but the fundamental objective is to ensure that customers receive least cost service over time. And in the Electric Choice and Competition Act that predated Act 129 and was reaffirmed as part of Act 129, the legislature has determined that economic forces are that competitive market forces are more effective than economic regulation at controlling prices. So I think that answers the question that robust retail competition will generate least cost service to customers. And so I think regarding the procurement standard of a portfolio of contracts, any reasonable hedging shop for a competitive retail supplier is going to deploy a prudent portfolio approach that's going to rely on a variety of procurement instruments. So I think the procurement activities that an EGS would engage in as an alternative default service supplier meet the Act 129 standards.
So during the transition period, I'll take you back to the Jan 102, because this program was effectively a 5-year program for this affiliate retail electric provider to serve this price-to-beat formula. And they had to effectively stick to the mechanism that Chairman Smitherman spoke earlier about, where the price could be adjusted up to 2 times per year based off the 12-month forward curve of NYMEX for natural gas. And so that adjustment mechanism would ratchet up, which meant that it wasn't perfectly aligned with how every other wholesale generator would be selling bilateral contracts for power. It's just more of an index that's saying in aggregate, not based off what was procured power, but in aggregate, there's a fuel factor portion of the former regulated electric bill that we will adjust to an index based off natural gas. Certain affiliate retailer providers hedged for long durations in time. Some hedged for much shorter durations of time, but they must charge this price-to-beat rate, which gave the competitors a sense of what was the benchmark price that they needed to beat. When that price went up, which particularly the high-stress period was around Hurricane Katrina, natural gas prices rose. The price-to-beat did actually go up, although for some affiliate retail providers it was staged, so it wasn't just a single move. It was moved over a period of about 6 to 9 months. But then immediately natural gas prices fell. Affiliate retail electric providers did not go in at that moment in time and strike down the price to beat. They had a choice to make. They could go in and strike down the price to beat, which would have been one of the two strikes because you only had two strikes up or down. And if they used one on the way down, they may not have another one on the way up if gas turned around. Competitors came in and swept up a lot of share in that period. And I think had the price to beat not gone up in that period of time, in the Hurricane Katrina time frame, we'd be looking at a different Texas market right now. I don't think you would see the robust set of offerings that Chairman Smitherman laid out. And I also think just from an innovation, not just price, but the challenges that Chairman Smitherman made about legacy providers not innovating at the same rate as new, we try every day to disprove that theory. But, you know, today we launched an iPhone application for a prepaid service product. And I don't think those kind of innovations come about just through regulatory frameworks. I think those innovations come out because we have lost enough share that we now, with the training wheels off, the price to beat has expired. We can sell at any price, high or low, and offer any other product or service. And so I do think that mechanism had a period of transition that served its purpose. But I think it also, in the aftermath, where we have been off that now, 07, 08, 09, 10, and halfway through 11, and to my knowledge, there's not a single customer on Polar, as I stated earlier, and they've got abundant choices. So I think the mechanism needs to be in place, but it needs an end date, regardless of the mechanism.
Thank you. Commissioner Christie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had the opportunity to read all of the testimonies, as well as the testimonies of those who are not in attendance here today. And the observation I just came to a few moments ago was that if you look at who testified and what their position is, you have on one side the consumers, i.e. the consumer advocate, the small business advocate, the industrials, AARP, City of Philadelphia, and some others that are basically saying it's working, it's leave it alone. And then you have the EDCs that are also basically saying it's working, leave it alone, but maybe there's tweaks that we can make to improve this to perfect our default service product. And then we have you guys saying that, you know, these consumers don't get it, we need to go to a different way. So I throw that out to you. How do you reconcile that?
I think it's a different approach and a different vision of what is, in fact, the dynamic way to serve consumers in the most efficient manner over the longest period of time. I mean, least cost, you know, my understanding is for the longest term, before there was any deregulation, we were least cost as best the regulation could do, resulted in about $25 billion of stranded costs in the Commonwealth. So I'm not sure how least cost really provided the least cost price for consumers. I think the same is true today. A least cost, the best trader I've ever known had told me, you can often find, looking for the bottom, you're going to find the top more often than not. Least cost is a great idea, except when natural gas goes up to $15 and then the lease cost is a 20 or 25 cent power price. That's still lease cost. It's not what consumers need. I think you have to recognize that what you're looking for is a vibrant retail market that can allow consumers every day to make the pick that's best for them. And that's just, it's a different vision, and it goes back more to the Competition Act and how we think about, as I think the professor from Penn State said, what's the natural monopoly here? The natural monopoly is not retailing electricity, and therefore there's no need to sort of regulate that. So within the construct we have, I think the best way to move forward is to move forward where consumers are given active choices, where they're informed, and they have as many providers as possible. And I think long-term, I'm hopeful and I believe deeply, because I've seen it work in Texas, and I know it can work here, that the consumer advocate will be very, very pleased with that level of retail competition.
And I would agree. I mean, I think, you know, simply said, you know, leadership is hard. And when you have to make difficult decisions, you know, you have to be willing to place forward a vision of what, you know, retail competition means. And, you know, I fundamentally believe that competition will drive greater product innovation. It'll drive greater service innovation. It'll provide customer better results in the long run than a regulated alternative. And so, you know, it's back to what Richie made earlier. Is it a status quo state, or are we looking to make a change where we bring more opportunity to the state of Pennsylvania through products and services in the retail market? So for me, the picture is pretty easy, even though I will obviously tell you I'm biased. But I think the picture is pretty easy. Competitive markets work, and when they're properly regulated and well-defined and structured, everybody benefits.
And I guess I would agree. The easiest thing is always to do nothing. I mean, that's pretty well documented in a lot of different circumstances. But I think that when you get a market where suppliers' survival depends on them attracting those customers to products and services, you're going to end up with the least cost over time. And any other least cost kind of analysis is more theoretical than anything else. You're basically trying to pick price timing relative to the daily spot price. And the law of averages say 50% you're going to be better and 50% you're going to be worse. So you don't get any better price by having a portfolio approach than you do if you just play the market every day and took the market price. So, again, I think that suppliers competing will drive prices down to their lowest possible level, as well as offer customers other products and services they may want that you don't get in a default service today.
And I would agree, and I would just go back to the point I made earlier. A 13-cent price for small commercial customers in PPL is not the least cost option, nor is a 16-cent summer time of use price. Fundamentally, retail competition will drive the most economically efficient outcome and will result in least cost service to customers. And the slide that Chairman Smitherman brought was proof to that effect. Retail prices in Texas today are 8 to 9 cents for fixed price offers, including the transmission and distribution rates.
Thank you. Well, you'll have your work cut out to convince those people paying the bills. So good luck. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Christie. I'll wrap up with a question. There was an article yesterday, I believe it was in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. It says, First Energy launches marketing push. Power generators are competing for distributors' patrons. The article reads, a marketplace for lower generation rates was opened here in Pennsylvania in 1996, but only recently were state-mandated rate caps lifted and pricing left completely to markets. Now companies can charge different prices on the generation of energy, even to customers with a different utility, and state regulators are keeping a watchful eye. This is really directed at Gene and Tony. Here lies the problem that it highlights this misunderstanding between companies like First Energy Solutions and PP Energy Plus are completely different from their sister utilities. How do we get over that hurdle?
Well, I'll go first. And I guess I thought I was okay because Jim told me if the third or fourth word was different, I was all right. And since mine was the second, I thought I escaped that situation. But, you know, I guess on a more serious note, you know, obviously, if we believe there's a bad apple, I'd prefer to throw the bad apple out, not the whole bunch, which I think is always a wise practical approach. Also, I mean, PPL Corporation and obviously PPL Energy Plus takes, you know, our obligations to our customers and our obligations to the Commission's rules and policies very seriously. And, you know, with that, you know, I have the joy of, you know, being teased and ridiculed by my colleagues when I have a 30-second radio spot and 15 seconds of it is a disclaimer. You know, I believe there's adequate policies in place to educate, inform, and speak to customers on those issues, and I think we take that very seriously. You know, obviously, I talk to a lot of our customers, both on the, you know, C&I side and the residential side, making sure they understand those issues because we address those, you know, whenever they arise. We are not seeing that confusion amongst our customers. They know who we are. We've spent, you know, millions of dollars educating customers of who we are and, you know, why we are different from our parent company and why we are different from our sister company. So I think there are policies in place that protect consumers. I think, you know, we follow those policies strictly and we'll continue to do so. And I think there's ways to manage that in an effective manner, which doesn't necessarily harm the market.
In First Energy Solutions case, we, first of all, don't necessarily feel we have the same name recognition in our local distribution companies because they're all named differently. You have West Penn Power, Penn Power, Penn Elect, MedEd, which is very different from First Energy Solutions. Now, we do have the name of our parent company, but, you know, I would echo what Gene has said, which is we take code of conduct, we take very seriously our obligation to provide honest communication in the marketplace. Now, do we talk about the fact that we own generation? Sure we do. But we don't talk about the fact that we're affiliated with West Penn Power or others. Now, we do go aggressively in some of those markets, but, you know, I don't know that we should be faulted for being an aggressive marketer in the markets we've determined are ones that we're interested in. So, again, we make or go to great pains not to confuse First Energy Solutions with the local utilities, which is the name recognition that most of the customers have. And beyond that, we are very competitive.
I want to thank the panelists for your participation here today. I think my colleagues and I are really enlightened by some of your perspectives. Let me say this. I know we had representatives from the AARP here. The testimony from the Consumer Advocate and the Office of Small Business Advocate and Harry Geller with the PA Public Utility Law Project, I think it's fair to say that the five of us have a steadfast commitment to competitive electricity markets here in Pennsylvania. But what I heard earlier was a status quo position, in my view, that's unacceptable. You don't grow a state's business economy like you've done in Texas, by the way. I think 5 years in a row, the number one business climate in the country. That's leadership. And that's what we wanted to bring you all here today, to hear about ways we could borrow, add, and adapt to improve our market. We, again, appreciate your investment here. We appreciate your participation. I thought it has provided us a nice sounding board moving forward. This is a journey, or better put, this is not a sprint. This is a marathon. We will take our time. We will be diligent in bringing all interested parties to the table to get the right feedback because, as my good friend, our former chairman, Commissioner Cawley, would put it, there is going to have to be a day of reckoning where we talk to the legislature about this change. And as I often refer people or remind people, I could come up with a cure for world hunger without 102, 26, and 1, nothing happens in this town. So, again, I appreciate your participation. Before we adjourn, I want to thank Judge Buckley, and he's going to do some quick wrap-up. But also want to thank our good friends at the Pennsylvania Cable Network, PCN, for airing today's en banc hearing on retail electricity markets here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Thank you, PCN. Now I'd like to turn it over to Judge Buckley for wrap-up.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to refer to the Secretary's letter of May 25. This is not an adversarial proceeding, but it is a formal proceeding with an official record. A verbatim transcript is being compiled. Now, obviously, for those of us who are familiar dealing with commission records, that will be available for review in the office of the commission. But if anybody wants a copy of the transcript and the attachments to the transcript, they would need to contact the reporting service, Commonwealth Reporting Service. Paragraph 4 of the May 25 letter states that copies of the testimony were to have been provided today. I believe that we have most of those. Counsel, if your client did not provide us with one. You need to get with the Secretary of the Commission to correct that deficiency. And finally, although the chairman will adjourn this hearing in a few minutes, let me just point out that the record in this matter is not closed. The commission will apprise all interested parties of next steps in this investigation, including the second en banc hearing by secretarial letter. And with that, Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Thank you, Judge Buckley. And again, let me thank our Office of Communications, the leadership of Tom Charles and his team, for their coordination with today's event, as well as our Director of Operations, Karen Mowry, and our ACMA group. Did a tremendous job bringing everybody together here today, and my colleagues for their efforts in keeping us on time with some really good questions for our panelists. And lastly, let me thank our good friend from the Republic of Texas. Notice I didn't say Commonwealth. The Republic of Texas, dear friend and a great leader in his own right, Chairman Barry Smitherman. Chairman Smitherman, we are very appreciative of you taking the time out of your hectic schedule to cross the Mason-Dixon border to be with us here today.
Thank you.
This meeting is adjourned.